In the fall of 2015, the tension in Chicago was building between black activists and city leaders over the killing of Rekia Boyd, a 22-year-old black woman who had been shot by an off-duty police officer named Dante Servin at a Westside park. Ashley O'Shea was just out of college at the time, and she'd been thinking about activism and filmmaking, and so she took her camera to a public hearing of the Chicago Police Board.
I want you to know on behalf of the police board, we have urged you.
The community was frustrated, really angry about what they saw as the inability of the city administration to deal with police violence, and they believed promises for reform were just not being kept. So Ashley filmed the hearing, and she says she started to notice something about the people speaking their mind.
So McCarthy, where are you in the process of violating Dante Servin?
And it was like, not only are they striving after these really big, grand things, but also these aren't the typical people that I was seeing in my formal education when you talked about organizing and activism.
This case and all of the corruption around the police is taking up a lot of our time. You're out here protesting, trying to make sure that we're safe.
These were just like everyday young black people, a lot of young black women and queer folks, and they were the people that were centered in the space.
I am Rekia Boyd.
For me to see something like that, it just kind of like hit me in my stomach because I felt like this was like what civic engagement looks like. And if you are someone who is affected by these issues, who has had family members incarcerated or have lost family members because of the way that policing and other institutions are set up in the city, that you have a right and a stake to fight for it. You know, I really was just like wanting some sort of media that was capturing the present moment, because I felt like I wanted to make sure that the next generation is able to have access.
You wanted to be like, I want to document this. This thing is cool and new, and I want to be there with a camera to show people. It's almost like you're there from the beginning of this kind of new sense of activism and engagement.
You know, the genesis of the Black Lives Matter movement was definitely already happening. But I think as time had gone on and people were confronting these difficult conversations within organizing itself, you know, there was always this insistence and this reminder that the Black Lives Matter movement was started by three queer black women. It wasn't started by a man. And so I think around the time I came in, they were starting to really find their flow with it. And it became clear that a lot of them were centering this feminist perspective, and that was just really refreshing and exciting to see.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So Ashley O'Shea took that inspiration and the film she collected, and she started collecting more. She ended up with a documentary about the young black women activists that she encountered in Chicago, two in particular. The film is called Unapologetic, and it's the latest in our documentary series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're going to be screening the film next Thursday night. We'll give you more details about that here in a moment. Ashley is joining us throughout the hour. She's a freelance documentarian based in Chicago. An important part of the film is how activism is expressed through art. And so it begins with a spoken word piece by Iman Lauren, a poet and playwright who lives on Chicago's South Side.
Breaking news, another black death. We often peep the slightest of hand. The black death used as cape. The draping of our people to your cause. This is a story about that magic, about the historical, the unlikely, rarely reported facts about leaders and communities like ours. About how much they fail and succeed. About how black they are, how queer they are. When you take enough L's, you refuse to surf. But eventually, if you stay here long enough, you'll plant your feet and stay upright. This is our city. But when you expect folks who you've held back for centuries to say sorry, I'm afraid you'll find us rather unapologetic.
It's kind of just like a metaphor to talk about how when we're looking at institutions and systems, like they think a lot of times that they're getting one over on us or that we don't understand what is happening. And so that beginning statement is really like, we often see, like, we understand what you are doing and how you are continually oppressing Black and Brown communities or stripping us of resources. And so, she's kind of, you know, it kind of transforms into this piece about how we have to become magicians in a way to really try to trick the institutions back.
You know, it's interesting, Ashley. It seems like the idea of spoken word poetry is almost, as you say, you use it in the film, and we'll come back to this a little bit later as well, but as a kind of a framing element. It seems like the poetry and spoken word, I mean, well, as we talk about Bella here in a moment, that'll become really more important. But that seems really important to you, this idea of art in expressing this idea. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to me because it's important to Chicago. You know, I don't, it doesn't, the movement here does not exist without art and culture and music. And so we really wanted to pull those elements out throughout the film, because I think a lot of times people think that organizers are just these like hard bodied, have no emotion and are just so serious all the time. But really, like, that is one of the mainstays of the organizing scene, is how art functions within it, and definitely captured with Bella and other people in the piece.
You know, it's interesting that the film is not a bunch of talking heads. It is. And I wanted to ask you about the way you decided to sort of structure it, I guess. The style is, it's a portrait. There are these two portraits, really intimate portraits. How did it get that way? Like, were you thinking about that? No, I want it to be just this intimate portrait, or had you thought about it being more, you know, news driven or more topical or more talking heads, and it evolved this way? How did you get that way?
I came up through Cartemquin Films, which, you know, has this long 55-year history in Chicago and beyond, and is really steeped in this tradition of cinema verite and you know, kind of observational filmmaking. So I always knew that despite anything, that I would definitely be employing that approach and wanting to move beyond the initial interviews to really capture their lives in these intimate scenes and settings. I will say that at the beginning of the project, I think that we thought it was going to be a more top-down level picture of all of the organizations in Chicago and try to kind of dipping our toes into each space and seeing how they were working. And but it became clear as we started the post process, and shout out to my editor, Ruben Daniels, who did an amazing job. It became clear that that was not the film that needed to be made. And as the material kind of started talking to us, and as we started to show it and get feedback, it became clear that what people were most interested in were the two lives of these women. So once we kind of leaned into that and really started to shape like the Chicago politics story around Janae and Bella's story, I think that ended up working in our favor in terms of storytelling. It made for a better piece to focus on Janae and Bella just themselves.
It's interesting. You've said that people sometimes describe Bella and Janae, just in terms of the balance of the two personalities, as fire and ice. Talk a little bit about that, because in some ways there's one that is more Janae, and we'll talk more about them as we go here, but Janae's maybe a little bit more measured. She comes from an academic kind of perspective. Bella has a more kind of streetwise perspective, more abstract, maybe more artistic. And it's an interesting mix, I think.
So it's interesting, because I think I initially gravitated towards Janae because I could see myself in her more, in terms of, you know, what you're saying about being academically driven and very kind of type A and trying to do a lot of things at once.
Peace, everybody. How y'all doing? But I want to push us today to think about our futures. The reality is, especially Black women, been working hard since the beginning of time and been supporting everybody. If you've ever been supported by a Black woman, just snap your fingers. Let me hear you. Right?
Janae is always just kind of calculating and figuring out in her head, like, how she wants to approach a problem or a topic. Or even when I would ask her questions during production, she would often take a little bit of time before answering because, and it would always be like a profound, wonderful response. But she's just very, I think, calculated in that way and is able to translate, is very much so trying to like connect this like ivory tower world with what's happening on the grassroots level. And so I think has to be very particular in like how that connection happens because she's constantly moving between those two spaces.
Yeah.
And with Bella, it was just immediate electricity and vibrant.
People who see the film will understand what you mean by that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I initially met Bella at the it's the scene in the film where they're celebrating that the police superintendent was forced to resign, and Bella performed at the they had like a celebration at the CPD headquarters. And that's the first time I had just gone down there to document, and I hadn't met her before, and she performed and I filmed it, and I was like, I have to talk to this person. That's how Bella makes you feel. Like, you just want to talk to her because you're like, what is going on in that brain of yours?
Walk out the door, my grandma say your prayers. Assalamu alaikum. Don't mess with the pigs. I don't mess with the bacon. Think that the whole you say is mistaken. This is Black history that we are making.
But, you know, Bella has her reserved energy too. And what I really appreciate about her is that I think she's able to translate these big lofty ideas that we often see in organizing spaces. And she's able to take that and translate it for the hood, for lack of a better word. Like, she's able to talk to the people that are the closest to these issues. And I think a lot of time there's that disconnect. And so I appreciated that about her first, because I knew that's something that I personally couldn't do. And I also, you know, because she was from Chicago and from the west side of Chicago and that, which is like the like less talked about side of the city, I really wanted to include her voice. And you know, it took us a minute to get below the surface with her, but once we got there, I think that there was just so much insight to be gained.
Let's back up and talk more about Janae for a minute before we get back to Bella. She's at the University of Illinois at Chicago. She's working on, at least in the course of the film, this, you know, doctoral degree in social work. And so she's working on her dissertation. And that sort of represents a lot of what she's going through, this, you know, work with her dissertation committee and how much time she can commit to activism versus how much time she can commit to writing, and just all of the sort of turmoil that's going on in her life, which is really interesting. But we also see her obviously going back home to South Carolina
or
with her mother, which we'll get to. But I wanted to ask about her father, first of all, because she refers to the influence of her father. He had some experiences as an activist, it seems, and he is an inspiration for her. So talk a little bit about the way how is she formed? How is she thinking? Mm. What is it from her life that she's taking to her sense of activism?
So Janae had a really interesting upbringing. She was originally born in South Carolina, and at some point her parents separated. Her dad moved to New York, and by the time she got to high school, she actually went up to New York to live with her dad because she was having some issues with people at school in South Carolina. And so she really, I think the kind of having that split perspective of like a South Carolina and New York, you know, influenced a lot of how she moves about the world. She like understands the grind of a big city, but has these deeper connections to like Southern roots. And Ultimately went back to South Carolina for undergrad and then came to Chicago for further schooling. Mm-hmm. Her parents kind of had this like college sweetheart story of how they met, and the photo that you see in the film, she says, was him organizing to get a police officer fired off of the campus that he was on. Mm-hmm. And so I think she, like, as she was entering the more grassroots organizing space, she relied a lot on her parents in terms of just like trying to like shape what her voice looked like. And even like, I think it was difficult at times to try to translate that experience to them, especially when she was participating in these more direct actions where she was like, literally, she got arrested once, but then there were other times where there was just the possibility of arrest. And, you know, trying to navigate that kind of old guard versus new school thinking. Because I think that it was hard for her to translate to them kind of like the importance of direct actions like she was doing. But it's really beautiful to kind of see how that has developed, because I think I see with her family, you know, even though they have to have these harder conversations about how we're organizing now versus what they were doing, they're very open to the approach that she's taking. And they have this like intergenerational connection that I think is missing from a lot of spaces. And I can't tell you what my parents were doing in college if they were organizing or what they were up to. So yeah, she, even though she ultimately kind of ends up doing what she wants, I know like there were certain times where she really was worried. She didn't want her family to feel like she wasn't safe. But she used that kind of as to make a point and to explain to them what was happening. And even as you said, like what leads to like, she influences her mom a lot in those conversations too. So I think that's what I really appreciate, is just that open line of communication that they have across generations.
Yeah. Well, let's come back to Bella Baz. Let me play a moment from the film.
Both of my parents were incarcerated by the time I was 3 months old. When people are serving time, their families are serving that time with them. That's where my fight against abolition comes from, because you are destroying families. Like how I relate to people is completely...
Talk about that filter that is really defines her point of view, and this idea that this is about family and community, because that really becomes clear. And when you see Bella and her sense of activism, it's about place, it's about family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bella has this really, she has this firsthand experience. You know, her family was really was an infamous family on the west side of Chicago. But when the war on drugs came through that community, it shipped it not only of a lot of its resources, but of a lot of its leaders. It locked up, you know, despite what people want to say about gang life or their ideas about what folks were doing. These were the leaders in those communities. These are often the people that were making sure people got fed, were making sure people got to school, were organizing back to school drives.
Can we play that moment from the film?
Oh yeah, go for it.
Let me play this moment, because this is they're at a it's a great moment from the film. We see this, there's this Black Soul Nation picnic in Chicago, yes. And Bella's there and her mom's there, and we'll hear a man named Spellman there talking about how, as you say, that war on drugs took away really critical leaders who were on the ground and helping these communities. Yeah.
Somebody gonna tell you the gangs in Chicago are causing all the problems and is responsible for all the killings going on. I learned how to be a leader from gangs. I learned how to organize from gang members.
They went into our community and they took away all our heroes and people that we looked up to. They kidnapped them. And so that's why you see the violence in the neighborhood, because you don't have those figures who could come in and with one word they can stop this.
We talking about people who fed the block every single day.
Back to school programs mm-hmm. and everything. Not nobody that say, hey, go over there and shoot this person or go over there. You know, we cleaned the block up. old ladies and kids was able to play when we was growing up in the 80s and 90s. Now you can't even get the kids to come outside because there's no leadership and guidance.
You know, at that time, where Bella's family was located, it was the west side of Chicago. It's where MLK came in the 60s to organize. It was very well to do. It had many small owned businesses, good schools, all of these things. But kind of the mixture of like the war on drugs with white flight, and slowly just like stripping the community of those resources has kind of led it to this place where it is today. And so I think Bella's family is a perfect personification of that. Because her family members were leaders in those gangs. And despite the judgment that people often want to dole on people from there, I think that, you know, people were making alternative systems of support because they weren't getting it from their city officials or from their local government. But what makes it even more frustrating is that not only are you stripping the community of its leaders, you are now stripping this child that had absolutely nothing to do with anything of growing up with not just one of her parents, but neither of them for the first 7 years of her life. She had known her mother for the first 7 years of her life only through prison and traveling to all these different prisons where she got transferred. But, you know, she doesn't want to see other kids have to go through that. Like her story is similar to a lot of other kids on the west and south side of Chicago. And so when she entered the space in 2014, I believe, she didn't have anything she knew nothing really about community organizing. She knew what she knew from her community. And she knew that she had this voice and she had the ability to write these really strong lyrics and give these strong performances. And then she was able to kind of connect how everything she had experienced growing up was the result of like all these institutional decisions that she had no say in.
I love how also she obviously, people who see the film will see her extraordinary work, you know, with music, talks about using rap as activism, and her heritage, but also her connection with art is so cool, because there's this moment in the film where she talks about how when she is when she's rapping on the street, there's a kind of anger there. But when she's performing in the studio, I mean, clearly it's different, but she also talks about how it's not anger, but it's healing. Mm-hmm. What does she mean by that? I thought that was so interesting.
When Bella first began to perform publicly and, you know, people were having these reactions to it, and it was clear that she was galvanizing people, that kind of became her role for a lot of the couple years following. And so she was often if she was at a protest or an action, it was often rooted in some event of police brutality or community brutality that they were reacting to. So a lot of times it was about, you know, trying to energize the crowd and to rally them and to get their support behind the campaign to address whatever act of brutality had happened. And so, and Bella says this often, is like she never brings the same performance twice. So she's always, you know, because she's showing up in whatever emotion that she's having for that day or whatever emotion she wants to bring to the group. But I think there are settings like the studio, and I would argue even some protests and actions, like the first one you see where she's with the kids, I think is one that's more rooted in healing than anger. But you know, she has these performances where it becomes more about a process for her to understand, you know, what has happened on an emotional level versus a systematic level, and to really connect with the human side of what has occurred.
Ashley O'Shea, her documentary is Unapologetic. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
We'll be right back. The Utah legislative session is always 45 days long, and this year's session is shaping up to be extra weird due to the pandemic. I'm Sonia Hudson, politics reporter at KUER.
And I'm Emily Means, another politics reporter at KUER. We're the hosts of the podcast 45 Days, guiding you through the most important political issues of the week.
Subscribe to 45 Days for free wherever you get your podcasts, or just go to 45days.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling another documentary in our film series. This is our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Next Thursday night, we're going to be screening Ashley O'Shea's film, Unapologetic. It's a portrait of two black activists in Chicago, Janae Bonsu and Bella Boz. O'Shea says she wanted to focus on young black queer women and the part they've played in the movement for racial justice in the country.
So there's this scene early on in the film I wanted to ask you about. It's the Black Youth Project. Some of the activists, the young people, have gone into this restaurant.
Yes.
And the people are having brunch. And the maitre d' there is clearly annoyed that they've come into this restaurant. And as he tells the police, they've disrupted the brunch of some 200 people. And he asks this question. He said, what is this helping?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's clearly bugged by it. He's clearly annoyed. And he's pretty dismissive of it. But the question of what is this helping and the way people are responding, you kind of get at in the film. And there's this moment, I want to play another moment from the film. This is Lori Lightfoot, who at the time was president of the Chicago Police Board. She's now the mayor of the city.
Yes.
And she, well, let me just play this question because she raises the idea of what is this helping? You know, this sense of activism, are you really just protesting? Or are you doing something? Let me play this moment. We can talk about it.
Young people have attempted to impose upon me as president of the police board a power that I don't possess. They want any police officer who kills an African American to be fired, stripped of their pension without any due process, any investigation. There's clearly a role to play for protests. Some of the issues that we're talking about today related to the Chicago Police Department wouldn't be happening without people being out in the street. But there's a time and a place for everything. It's easy to yell and scream and protest. What's more complicated is to work towards actual solutions that improve the quality of people's lives.
So what does Janae have to say about that? What does Bella have to say about that?
You know, they say we tried to tell y'all. I think that is Lori Lightfoot and that man are certainly not the only people in the city or this country that feel that way.
Yeah.
And so what we were trying to do with the brunch scene and with moments like that was to definitely like kind of capture those voices and have and at that point that it comes in the film, you know, it's right after they've had that police board hearing with Rekia mm-hmm. Boyd's brother and kind of just like walk out of the meeting frustrated. And so what I have to say to that is that I think, one, I think there's this idea that protests kind of crop up out of thin air and have no strategy or organized thought to them, which is just completely the opposite of what is true. Even the ones that are more reactionary and kind of like an immediate response usually have a sense of organizing to it or an intention of what is meant to get out of it, whether that's, you know, bringing more education to a large group of people, gathering a group of people. You know, at some point, Janae says, like, sometimes people just need to gather and protest and rally because they need to get out their rage.
Yeah.
I
love that moment, by the way, because somebody's like, well, what's the technique? And she's like, you don't always have to have a specific technique necessarily. She says sometimes people just take to the streets because they feel.
Right. And you know what's wrong, you know, and I think this past summer in 2020, you know, with the killings of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd are a direct reflection of that.
Mm. One of the things you seem interested in the film is how it is that these social movements, in a really ironic way, can still privilege certain voices over others. You really sort of explore this. And one of the things Bella mentions in the film is that even when you're talking about the victims of police violence against Black people, that Black men get more attention than the Black women. And this is a kind of an important theme that you really explore that I can't say I've really seen explored in the same kind of way. Let me play a moment from the film. This is Bella talking about how her decisions about who she dates is influenced by what she's seeing by the men in the activist community and the women in the activist community. Here's another moment from the film.
So I have dated men and women. This community of women are warriors in a way that, like, I just don't see in our men right now. Like that you have a desire to protect me, to possess me, to control me, to have me. Like, by dating men, while our men are at this state, right, of complete and devastating psychological indoctrination into misogyny and misogynoir and a deep hatred for Black women. And if I know this, right, then am I going against my politics by still allowing them that access to me?
One of the things you've said is that women are often seen in the framework of men, and in the same way Blackness is seen in the framework of whiteness. But talk a little bit about this part of the film that you explore.
Yes, this moment in the film, I think, so we struggled a lot in post-production with trying to figure out, you know, how we were going to talk about Black queer feminism. And we didn't want it to be this, like, kind of, you know, hitting you over the head type situation where we just kept, you know, bringing it up as this kind of forced stereotype or, you know, always making it about who they're dating or having sex with and all of these things. But that conversation in particular, I think, is one of those moments where Bella is kind of speaking to what I think a lot of women are feeling, not even just in organizing space, but just generally, because, you know, we're in a time where we're getting all of this new language around movement. We're getting new language around racism, around sexism, around classism, around gender and sexuality. And a lot of times that is at a disconnect with generations past or even the generation that, you know, we're currently coming up in, because we're battling against these systems while we're also getting the language for it. And so you start to kind of have this struggle once you're in a community where you are able to have these conversations with this new language, but then you go back to another community where that is not happening. Or, you know, you're dating someone where that's not happening, or you're just trying to, like, kind of discover your voice in the space. And so I really like that moment because it makes it, it's not so cut and dry. You know, I think that, you know, people still have this attraction to men or to whatever these oppressive systems are, because we that's how we've been taught, or, you know, that's just who we're attracted to. But you still are kind of coming up against that tension and trying to figure out, like, how do I grapple with what my preference is or who I'm attracted to versus, like, what my politics are. And, you know, I would argue that I think a lot of these spaces are changing and that we're able to kind of confront those tensions and have those difficult conversations about it. But I think that moment just so perfectly encapsulates that constant back and forth that that a lot of women and queer folks are having in general, especially when, yeah, it's just it's a slow burn to that change. But yeah.
I think if I may play a moment between a conversation between Janae and her mom, where her mother identifies as queer, and you ask her in this section from the film what queerness means to her, I thought there was an interesting sort of
explanation in here?
For me, I identify as queer because I feel like I don't fit neatly into any other category. And for me, queer means different. It captures more of who I am than to just identify as simply heterosexual or simply lesbian. That had everything to do with you.
And with you, she means Janae, her daughter, and the influence that her daughter's had on her. I thought that explanation made a lot of sense to me, that she's mm-hmm. thinking about it in such a more expansive way than just gender identity or sexual orientation. This is such an expansive way of thinking of your identity, almost.
Yeah, that moment in particular, I was definitely, that interview was just me, especially kind of thinking about queerness in a way that isn't just about sexuality or who you're dating, but really what a queer politic means. It invites people that have just different approaches to a lot of these oppressive structures that we're seeing. And I think at some point in that conversation, you know, Janae talked about, you know, how, you know, a service worker that is organizing for, you know, for union rights could be a queer politic, or, you know, there's many people within these organizations themselves that maybe don't identify queer as their sexuality, but identify with a queer politic. I think that if a lot of people, or people just generally start to think about what is a unique, creative, never done before way that I could approach this problem or this issue, that can be considered a queer politic. And if we keep more, if we make space for those conversations more and for those approaches, it gets back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, centering those furthest at the margins, that is going to free up so much space for making these large shifts and changes that we're trying to make.
Janae and Bella both are really questioning the conventional wisdom and the way it's been done in the past, really throughout the film. And Bella is so brave. There's this moment where they're meeting together with members of the older generation, older Black historians. And there's a scene where Bella critiques the older generation. She says, this younger generation, our younger generation is not being taught to be Black.
Our generation isn't taught Black culture, what it means to be Black, from you anymore. So we hold our elders accountable for a lot of the state that we're in right now.
That's a really amazing moment. She's so brave to say it.
So brave, so brave. And that conversation in particular was actually with a 100-year-old activist named Timwell Black, who's been organizing in Chicago for many, many, many years. But that conversation was framed as an intergenerational space for young folks to talk to older folks about these different approaches. But then the conversation just kind of veered into who our leaders are. And I think at that moment, we only include a little bit, but prior to that, it had really been a conversation about how this isn't a popular opinion, but in general, like when segregation was still in place, you know, we were confined to a community that looked exactly like us. So for Black people, at least, you know, in the post-Jim Crow era, a lot of what they would see in their communities were not just their immediate families, but they were seeing Black professionals, the doctors and lawyers and all these people that were having a direct influence on the community. And then integration happened and white flight and all of these things that kind of caused the community to kind of spread apart. Which I don't think is the inherent issue. I think the inherent issue is more that we are not creating enough spaces for us to connect across generations. Yeah. And so what she's saying in that moment is like, we're no longer getting our lessons directly from our elders. or from older family members, a lot of times we're getting them from social media, from music videos, from artists and all these other things. And that's influencing how our generation is now approaching these issues. When a lot of times, and this is partially why I wanted to make Unapologetic, I think there's a lot that is cyclical about movement space. A lot of the sexism that we see in the movement now was happening in the civil rights movement and the Black Power movement, and could likely happen again. But because we often don't hold the spaces for generations to connect across, we're seeing these issues crop up again. And I was just it was just so cool to capture that conversation, because it was it's a direct solution and something that we're hoping to do more with the film. It's just to connect across generations, because there's folks that were in the work in the 60s and 70s that don't agree with what's happening now. But that's something that should be talked about, because that's been something they could take to the community that they're in, or to the people that they were organizing with. And we can create more of a coalition.
There's a moment I wanted to ask you about, just because I found it so beautiful, where you went with, as you were referring to before, you went with Bella and her mother to see her brother in prison. And it's in this part of the film where you're talking about this proposal that she's working on, this project of writing. And you include in it her reading this poem. She begins the proposal of the project with this poem. I just thought it was really beautiful, and it maybe could give listeners a sense of Bella's work. Do you want to say anything about this moment?
Yeah. So the images that you see in the moment, which I won't give a ton away, but me and my producer had taken this 4-hour journey down to visit Bella's brother in prison. And we had this whole complication where we couldn't go into the prison to interview him. Like, they granted us access to interview him if we were to go without Bella or her mom. Like, kind of this weird thing of, like, not wanting them to influence, like, what was happening in prison. So it kind of just defeated the whole thing, because we wanted to, like, see how they were affected by it. And I just wouldn't be captured and if we did an interview, I think, without them present. And so we were kind of just like stranded in this town while we waited. Cause you know, they were visiting him for as long as they could. So it was going to be like 2-4 hours. And so we were kind of, I don't even remember the city. I need to put it to my memory, but we were just there and I had the camera and we had to figure out a creative way to kind of capture the prison and the city without going into the actual prison itself. But I think if you've ever been to a city where there's a prison, it's very evident. Like it's in the middle of nowhere. The entire city is depending on that economy to survive. And so we just captured that collection of images. And then we found the interview where Bella had read the poem, the spoken word piece that she submitted for her Soros Justice Fellowship. And it just, shout out to my editor, Ruben, again, it just matched up perfectly.
When they took him, I kicked. Led my first protest in my mother's womb, filling her core with howls, hoping they'd hear me and give my father back. Gave my mother back pains carrying me to courtrooms. Knew when a bailiff had a hand on his gun, by the way my mother coddled me in her stomach, I could feel the fear of a federal judge forcefully forfeiting her freedom feel my mother's fingertips. When they took her, I didn't even bother to scream. I didn't protest when they plucked me from her plump breast at the podium, because I learned to be afraid with my mother's milk well before I was born. Well before I was full of matter, I didn't matter. I was never meant to survive. I am the daughter of the discriminatory destruction disguised as America's war on drugs, and having suckled the stigmas of blackness, womanhood, and imprisonment, my shame kept me silent and pacified long enough.
I want to say also, not only is that imagery beautiful, but the kind of visual imagery we see on the West Side is really beautiful too.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like there are moments when it's almost a portrait of that part of Chicago, and it really comes through in the film. Well, I want to ask you finally, the
the spoken word poetry that frames the piece, the end, we hear that Black women cannot continue to be the black mules of the world. Black women can't be, it shouldn't be their sole responsibility to do all the emotional labor and carry the burdens that they have to. Will you say something about that finally? Because this comes out in the film, and Bella herself talks about that it's clear they can't accomplish their work until they themselves heal. Would you say something about that finally?
Yeah, so much to say. But yeah, I think that although I said in the beginning, you know, that I never was in my formal education, I never really had been shown this specific form of leadership from Black women and queer folks. But despite that, you know, I grew up in a community of Black women, whether that is in my home, in my extended family, in my church, in my school, in all these different places. And so, you know, Black women just wear so many hats. You know, it's like we are here to be we're fighting for our race, but we're also fighting for our families and for our children, and are often the nurturers in the home, but then have to leave the home and nurture somebody else in our career and other spaces. And there's just so many different hats and roles and responsibilities that we take on because we exist at this intersection of Blackness, and we exist at this intersection of race and gender and sexuality and all these, you know, all these different intersections. And so I think that, you know, we are well aware that it's within our wheelhouse to handle a lot of these problems and issues that are coming up and to figure out ways to solve them or come up with new strategies for them. But as you see in the film, like, that is not a sustainable approach, and often leads to burnout or to people leaving the movement. And although I'm not downplaying that, you know, men are not are involved in the movement at all, but I think because so much of that emotional, you know, mental labor often falls on us, that then we aren't able to show up well in other spaces. And so, you know, it's really just pushing other people to open themselves up to this new approach, to allow women to lead, to follow their lead, but to also like give them support. Like I did not make this film as like a man-hating film to say like, no men ever come help, because we need everybody, like even beyond the Black community. Like we need white folks, we need Latinx folks, like we need everybody, because there's so many systems that are working against us. And so really those moments are just to be like, can we take just a little bit of the burden off of Black women and femmes, because, you know, we're tired. And a lot of times we won't say that we're tired, but we are. And so, you know, even making the film, that was kind of my contribution. It's like, I wanted to take a little bit of the burden off and, you know, reflect back to them all of the amazing things I was seeing them do. And so hopefully other people are encouraged to do the same.
Ashley O'Shea, thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you.
Ashley O'Shea. She's director of the documentary Unapologetic. And you can watch the film online with us next Thursday night at 7. We'll be doing a live Q&A after the screening, and Bella Boz will be joining us for that. And as you'll see in the film, she is pretty terrific, so you won't want to miss it. You can get a link for the screening on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter, @RadioWest. Our intern is Aaron Camargo, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.